Welcome to Talking Giants, presented by SeatGeek. I'm your host, Bobby Skinner, here with my co-host, Justin Penick. And it's our annual vacation week, so we have pre-recorded episodes. And, Justin, we're doing our first ever Best Of podcast.
Hey, Bobby Skinner. Hope everybody had a really good 4th of July. Hope you had a lot of burgers. Hope you had a lot of dogs. Hope you didn't blow your hands off shooting off some fireworks. Shout out JPP circa 2013. You have a memory like an elephant, because when it comes to these podcasts and stuff, I mean, I can't even count how many shows I've pressed published on in my short little life, and I have a very bad memory for what's good moments, what's bad moments, et cetera, et cetera. So you put together these moments, and excited for people to hear just how bad the audio quality was and just how bad the video quality was at some points of our history.
It's not too bad. I actually thought for the most part it was pretty good. So it's going to include 8 player interviews. And I'll tell you right now what we have. We got Dave Tollison, Darnay Holmes, Nick Gates, Rich Soibert, Kevin Zeitler, Andrew Thomas, Brandon Jacobs. That one will be the shortest, or the second shortest because it was recent. And then Sandro Platzkammer. And then we have 5 segments. When we called Glenda Jones. People don't know that one. That was a very funny one.
Yep.
Little Caesars, which turned into like a epic moment in show history. Gordy on a bridge. He was suicidal in our voicemail line. We have my first ever rant. Like, some of my favorite content on the podcast, Justin, is when I like have been stewing on something for a full day and I just have like a page of notes and I'm like, give me 5-6 minutes just to rant straight through on this. My very first rant talking about Daniel Jones in the media after the draft.
And 2019 is when you went after people a lot more than you do now.
Oh, yes, big time. And then the beginning of maybe my favorite podcast, not our best podcast, but my favorite podcast was titled Weird in New York. It was the Dolphins preview when I went up to the Bronx in 2019. So first, we're going to do Dave Tollison. Dave Tollison was really good. I think this is actually the longest interview portion that we are taking on this, because I thought he just was very open with us, you know, so that was awesome. And Tollison's become a friend of ours. So let's kick it to Dave Tollison.
I want to get back to the Lane Kiffin part, but was there ever a point once you kind of established yourself, you know, after the 2007 year, where it's like, man, I wish I didn't have all these like all pros in front of me on the depth chart? Because, I mean, it was probably the most stacked D lines in NFL history.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be the only defensive end for those 5 years that's not going to be in the Ring of Honor.
We'll have to figure something out.
So where you Strahan, I tell all of them, Strahan, OC, and Tucker already. It's going to be interesting with JPP, which you could probably make an argument. That kid played some really good football for us in New York. I always tell him I'm going to write my name in Sharpie underneath theirs on the stadium.
What we can do is, so you don't get in those like bad graces for doing that, we'll set that up and do it for you.
Here's the deal. We're going to have a Talking Giants Ring of Honor. We're just going to decide this right now. Talking Giants Ring of Honor. Dave Tollison's going to be the first inductee of the Talking Giants Ring of Honor.
Guys, this is the first time I've ever been inducted to anything. I didn't graduate from high school, so I'm not in my high school Hall of Fame. I didn't graduate from college, so I'm not in my college Hall of Fame. And I sure as hell ain't in the Ring of Honor for the New York Giants. So this is my first one. I appreciate it, guys.
You inspired an idea. We're going to go and get like the grittiest guys from those 2 Super Bowls and just make like a separate area for them.
Sure. That'd be awesome, man. You guys all heard the story. It started in 2007 when we did the High Motor Wall of Fame.
No, I don't remember. I mean, I remember the NASCAR package and the creating of that.
And so we had that whole NASCAR package thing. So me and Zach DiAzzi started the High Motor White Guy Wall of Fame in the locker room.
We call those Gruden grinders.
So we had pictures of like Tom Coughlin in college. We had the equipment guys, the Skiba brothers up there, like in their youth football equipment. We had Feagles. We took half a picture of Brian Keel and half a picture of Dominic Hickson, and we inducted their white side because they were mixed. It's hilarious, man.
You know, and this is, and Dave at Nose Guard in Super Bowl 46, You know, you beat your guy. You kind of get your arm around Brady. He's falling. And then Tuck lands on top of him, and you don't get a credit for a Super Bowl sack. I mean, we're going to get you in our own Ring of Honor. Is there any way we can talk with Tuck and fix this?
Well, I don't want to sound like Mark Gastineau. So, you know, Mark Gastineau's
yeah.
That's funny, though. Like, that's the joke. I mean, and I, honestly, guys, like, you had asked earlier, Justin, about if, or maybe it was you, Bobby, about me having all these guys in front of me, and I could, there was, but I wasn't, I just wanted to play. So, like, for me, it was never about, like, I deserve more, or I knew I could start. I started one game against the Redskins. I had, like, 8 tackles and a sack, and I played pretty good. We lost the game, but I thought I played pretty good. But it wasn't – I was never really concerned about that. Like, OC and Tuck specifically, because we played 5 years together, always treated me like an equal. It was never – and Matthias – so, funny story about that 2011 game that I started, which is this, I'm telling you guys, we're going to have to like 10 podcasts. My brother was a U.S. Marine, and he did his last tour when I was in, I just went to NFL Europe. He was coming back, his second tour. And so, it was crazy. I had his dog tags. I still have them. When I started that game, it was the 10-year anniversary of 9/11, and that's when my... that's why my brother had got in. So it was like some really crazy kind of emotional stuff for me that I was, that was the only game I was probably gonna ever start. So I wasn't gonna start. They asked Matthias to start a defensive end that game. And I didn't know, I had never heard this before till I read an article about it a couple years ago. Didn't know it. Tuck's hurt. OC's hurt. We move up Justin Trateau from practice squad. And who was our – it would have been JPP was the other starting defensive end, right? They asked Matthias, he played linebacker all camp, to move to defensive end and start that game. He's like, nope. He's like, I'm not going to take Dave's spot. Dave deserves to start. That's it. Or I'm not playing. And, like, for me personally, that's always what concerned me, is they knew I was reliable, that they could trust me. So – you know, the junk punch sack in the Super Bowl, because there's like a picture on the internet. It looks like I'm grabbing his unit, you know?
we'll find it if there is.
But how do you, like, I mean, what am I, who am I? Like, I'm the guy that bitches about that. Like, I just won my second Super Bowl ring.
From the sound of it, and, you know, from us as fans of the team from the outside looking at it, I mean, it really does seem like you guys were a family. And maybe other teams like have this and we don't see it because we don't, you know, we're not up and close. But, I mean, something special. I mean, like, just like that offensive line, you know, from David Deal to Kareem McKenzie on the other side, those guys, you still see them hanging out today. You know, we got to talk with Soibert, and that he's like, we genuinely liked each other and loved each other. And you have, you know, all different types of personalities, from those guys to guys like Brandon Jacobs and Plax. And then Eli at the head of it. I mean, kind of like a wild time and like a good memory for you guys. And it seems like every time anything happened with Eli, you guys were there to defend him.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when he was benched. Let's kind of like go down that road to some like of your reactions of that family and how we saw it out, come out. Tom Coughlin gets fired or, you know, resigned, but we know it's fired. And, you know, I don't remember what your reaction was, but, I mean, what were your thoughts on that? For a guy that had won them 2 Super Bowls and probably didn't have the best teams out there in the last few years.
Yeah. Obviously, I love Tom dearly. He's one of the greatest coaches I ever played for. And one thing I always respected about him was he's always really honest with what his expectations were of me personally. Which is something you just don't get in the NFL. Everybody beats around the bush. And I remember the last time I got cut, Dennis Allen called me from the Raiders, right when I got cut from the Raiders, and I retired midway through the next year. But he's like, hey, Dave, we really appreciate everything. I said, Dennis, come on. Like, you don't need to sugarcoat cutting me. This is like the 6th time I've been cut. I appreciate it, you know? Whereas Tom was more honest, which I enjoyed. As far as the Tom – firing, resigning, whatever, did not bother me near as much as how they treated Eli. And I think a lot of guys would say that. because Tom would push back from the, he would push back on his players. He would push back on the media. I mean, he was a very strong opinion man, you know?
And Eli's the opposite.
I don't want to say that specifically because Eli's probably one of the toughest people I've ever met in my life.
Okay. Absolutely.
He just doesn't get involved. And so that's why you got what you got from us when they benched him.
Because you knew for a fact that you weren't going to hear from anybody else.
Exactly. And yeah. and it was our job as we took it when we played for him that you weren't going to treat him that way. And if you were, you were going to hear it from us. Not just Rich and Dave and Chris and Kareem. But you were going to hear from the defensive guys too. And I'll never forget... I just remember this story recently. I remember Eli got hit really hard against the Ravens in 2008. And I didn't do anything back to anybody, like on the Ravens. And it bothered me. And I apologized to him after the game. I said, if anybody treats you like that again, if I have a chance, I'm going to try to kill the other team's quarterback. And he was like, I appreciate that, Dave. And so, like, that was the relationship. Like, it wasn't like, you know, offensive linemen will defend their quarterback. Like, we were going to defend Eli. Like, he was our guy. Because not that he wouldn't defend himself. Like, that's where it gets really confusing with Eli, because he's not a pussy, right? Can I say that on this?
Yeah, go for it.
He's really not. He's just not going to get involved. Like, which, we are cool with that, because we'll handle it. Like, Eli, that's good. You stay back. We'll whoop the shit out of somebody. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that either, but.
Fly free, man. You're good. So with that, like, it's kind of like that big brother. Like you said, he wasn't soft or anything, yeah. But it was like, he's not going to talk, like, he's not going to say anything through the media or come back. You know, he doesn't have any, like, kind of online presence. And we saw that at it's one of the weirdest careers because, you know, he retires and it's an awesome moment. It's one of those times where all of Giants fans can come together and, like, enjoy something. And then from the national view, it's like, we got to get clicks. Let's take shots at Eli at his retirement. And I mean, it's like, we kind of led the defense brigade on that. When you look at Eli's career, like, what are your total thoughts on him? Obviously, I know you think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer, but it's like, I don't know. Maybe I'm losing the point of this question, but when you think of Eli Manning and tell your kids about Eli Manning, what do you tell them?
He started 210 straight football games in the National Football League. Guys, I was a backup. I started one game. I think the most I made was like, and I'm just talking about appearing in my case, right? I probably appeared in 28 straight games, maybe. You realize how tough, physically tough, you have to be at a position when they're literally trying to destroy your life every chance you get. That you have that part of it. But then you have the mental aspect of it where, like, we play defensive line, and I don't want to sell ourselves short, but, like, we goof around a lot. You know what I mean? Like, you know, especially with pass rush stuff, it was a lot more – I'm kind of making light of it, but it was pretty complicated what we were doing up front. But we knew what we were doing, and we were really playing reactionary football. So – but Eli was the first guy and the last guy out on the mental study part of it. Then you have the media side of it. Like, that whole year in 2011, remember when he said he was elite? Like, it was a joke.
Yeah, on the K-Show. On the K-Show, yeah.
Yeah, they made fun of him. You know, like, Eli showed up to work every time he was asked to show up. I mean, how many grown men in any profession can you say that about?
And I don't think he gets enough credit for it. Like, you know, people do talk about that, but they just think, like, oh, he got lucky. He never got injured. I mean, that 2007 year... he was supposed to be out for, you know, a month to 2 months after he suffered an injury against Dallas. And you know what? If he misses that time, like most QB wins would, like, you guys don't win that Super Bowl. So I also don't think he gets enough credit for that.
Guys, he didn't miss a practice. He didn't miss a meeting. He didn't miss an off-season workout. That's the incredible thing about it. And with all due respect to what you guys do for a living, have you guys missed a day of work?
Well, I'm actually pretty good at my streak, but yes, I have missed a day of work.
And What do you have, 18 years or 16?
16.
How many you got going, Bobby?
Well, I took some time off in December, so I'm only at 2 months, Dave.
Justin?
Dave, I literally missed like my first two classes last Friday because I overslept.
Yeah. All right. And again, I'm like, dude, I missed practice in the NFL because I was sick one day. You know, like, that's Hall of Fame worthy within itself. Like, as difficult as that is, you know? I mean,
and in the Hall of Fame debate, you know, this has been something that a lot of people have, they've tried to downplay that. They've tried to downplay the value of being there, especially when you consider this is the most important position in all of sports. You know, this isn't just the most important position of football. It's the most important position in all of sports. People have tried to downplay that fact of the value of being there for your football team in that kind of role. So I want to thank you for really bringing that up and bringing that to light, especially thanks to Pro Football Focus who really downplays that. So had to throw that in there.
Pro Football Focus are a bunch of idiots.
Yes, Dave, I lead the war against that. Justin likes him a little bit, but I lead the war.
How do you base a grade on a player in a game when you don't know the call?
Dave.
You know how many times
I talked about making this podcast long? You're going to get me fired up and we're going to go.
You know how many times, Bobby, the design of the pass rush was for me to get double teamed or literally to be stagnant at the line of scrimmage and cover guys up when they made moves?
Right.
Like, and that was my job.
Yeah, I agree with
you. To get blocked, not necessarily blocked, but to be in an area.
Yeah. And like you said, like this, you don't know what a guy's role is. You don't know when, you know, a route is ran wrong anyways. But Justin, yeah, you have a question about the celebration.
Podcast about that.
Yeah, Dave, you can't see it, but Bobby Skinner right now is fist pumping. And he's absolutely loving that you just brought that up. So I want to move to talking about your sack celebrations. I've been a regular season ticket holder for the Giants. I believe I was in section 330 in the old stadium. Then we moved to the new stadium. I'm in section 315, and I'm pretty sure for the span of your entire career, I didn't miss a single home game of yours. But I do remember in particular Christmas Eve, 3rd and 10. You line up as a defensive tackle in NASCAR formation with Tuck and JPP. You sacked Mark Sanchez. So when you got up, what did you do?
So that was the Roadhouse. So that wasn't the first one, though.
Right, right.
The genesis of this, okay, as you guys have been talking to me for like 45 minutes now, maybe almost an hour. Like, guys, I was in the NFL. Like, it's like a joke within a joke. It's like my life is like Curb Your Enthusiasm, but real. You know, like, so we're flying to the Metrodome and the Metrodome collapses. So we land in Kansas City. So we're kind of like, no one really, well, no, first we land in Kansas City because the storm gets too bad. Well, then the Metrodome collapses. So we're like, what are we going to do? Well, we'll stay the night here and the NFL is going to figure it out. Well, my wife's from the Kansas City area. She was born and raised there for a short time. So I ordered the tacos from this place called In a Tub Tacos, right off 29. Unbelievable. They use macaroni powder cheese on their tacos, dude, deep fried. Unbelievable. So I ordered like 250 tacos for the guys. We're staying at like a Holiday Inn. This is Saturday. They come. We're watching Family Guy. And it's that episode where Peter Griffin's running around kicking everything and everybody. And every time he does it, he goes, Roadhouse. So Barry Cofield's like, I bet you won't do that as a sack celebration. I said, he bet your ass I will. So we fly to Detroit to play Minnesota in Detroit, which is another story on it within itself. It was like World War Z when they opened the doors. Anyways, I get a sack and I do it. And everybody loved it, man. Everybody loved it. So that was like, in 2011, I ended up having 5 sacks. So it was like on like Donkey Kong, man. Roadhouse. Yeah.
You get to do as much Roadhouse as you want. All right, Dave, I'm going to finish it up.
All right, next, Darnay Holmes. This is the shortest clip on this, Justin, because our interview with Darnay Holmes was very short, and he was advertising his youth football camp, and he kind of viewed us as like, I'm like, as just a, you know, I want to get my youth football camp out there and I don't want to answer any real questions. So we just started asking wild questions to just see if we could get in the laugh. And this was one of my favorite questions in show history ever. What do you think of the Darnay Holmes interview in whole?
I kind of knew heading into it that it wasn't going to be like some of our other interviews. I knew it wasn't going to be like Gates, especially wasn't going to be like the Brandon Jacobs one that we just did. It was going to be one of those interviews where it's like, yeah, it's good for you to come on the show because it was at a slow point in the offseason. And it was also good that we were helping out LPG. We were helping out him by getting the foundation kind of out there, the Pasadena Giants. So you did get him to laugh. It took him a while in this clip, but you did get him to laugh, and it's kind of cringe, but it's also really freaking hilarious when you listen back to it.
We actually had our last Golden Tate fight on the Darnay Holmes interview episode.
Oh, thank God.
So here is Darnay Holmes.
So Justin brought up that Dallas game, and I feel like that was the game where Giants fans from the outside were like, hey, maybe we got some here because you played really well against CeeDee Lamb. Now, this is an immature question because it goes through my mind, but whenever you did stop him, did you ever make like a CD's nuts jokes? Because I wouldn't be able to stop myself if I was guarding CeeDee Lamb.
A what joke?
Yes. You never heard have you ever heard the joke, you like cassettes or CDs?
Uh-uh.
Well, what do you prefer, cassettes or CDs?
I'm going to go with cassettes.
Oh, damn. Well, if you say CDs, then you say CDs nuts. So every time I hear CD Lamb, I think of that. I think of that every time. It's burnt into my immature brain. So I had to go and finish off with that. So we're finishing up.
Duly noted, Darnay Holmes is not a trash talker. Duly noted.
Well, just that's a free one on me. Use that next year.
CD's nuts on CeeDee Lamb. That's what the Talking Giants guys. That's a goal that we would like you to say. You come up with CeeDee Lamb. You have a pass deflection on him.
Make sure you look into CD a camera nuts. And I could cap. Yeah. You know, we're making all these plans for you. In your mind, you're probably like, no, I'm not doing any of this. So.
Yeah, y'all got a good podcast going.
We try. We just had Rich Soibert on, and we ended up getting ourselves in a little trouble there too. So we appreciate you one last time.
All right, next. This is from Justin's first ever episode of Talking Giants. Actually, no, check that. I thought it was the first one. It was actually the second episode of Talking Giants, Justin.
Yes, that I joined.
And it was the episode when Joe Judge was hired as the Giants head coach. So that's a huge episode for us. At the time, it was the most downloaded episode ever. And we got a wrong phone call number because we used to have a voicemail line. We had a wrong phone call number and the legend of Glenda Jones. You, at the time, I thought you were kind of like, why are you doing this?
No, I was legit. Like, I would just check the voicemail line. I would get an email whenever we would get a voicemail. And despite there being a whole greeting of this is the Talking Giants line, this old woman, Daniel Jones' grandmother, left us a voicemail.
And she told us to call her back, and we called and her we back. Did. So here is Daniel Jones' grandmother, Glenda Jones.
We said if you call in, we're not going to advertise voicemails, but if you leave a voicemail, we'll play it. So play that damn voicemail.
This is Glenda Jones, and I need to talk to Marty. Would you ask her to please call me? Thank you.
So, Justin, you heard the clicking of the phone. That was from a home phone. That was Glenda Jones.
Yeah.
Now, do we think this is Daniel Jones' grandma, and this is a test to see how nice we'll be to Miss Glenda Jones?
1,000%, it definitely is. Did you? Because you know I'm close friends with Daniel Jones. So are you. We're both close friends with Daniel Jones in interesting ways.
We've done some pretty weird research that we're not going to bring up.
I met his mom.
We've discussed. That is true. Have you met his grandma, Glenda?
No, she was not in the family tent during the preseason.
How did she call that number? Where did she get that? And who is this woman named Marty?
We do need to find Marty. Glenda Jones needs to call Marty.
I was going to say Marty. I was going to say Marty Brodeur, but Marty Brodeur is a man.
Yeah, tough. But the funny thing is, when you call that phone number that is set up for the Talking Giants voicemail, when you call that number, the phone doesn't even ring. What comes up is my voice, and it says, you have reached the Talkin' Giants voicemail. If you leave a voicemail, there is a chance you can be featured on the show. Without further ado, let's talk Giants. So that greeting was completely ignored by Glenda Jones. And I'm saying this out of respect, out of respect and reverence for Glenda Jones, who is Daniel Jones's grandmother. But she completely ignored. Ignored the fact that this is a Talkin' Giants voicemail line. It is not Marty. I clearly said what it was for. So I did say that there's a chance you could be on the show. So congratulations, Glenda Jones.
Hey, watch your tone.
I'm
watch
sorry.
Watch your tone when you're talking about Mrs. Glenda
I naturally
Jones.
Come that's off
our,
as sassy.
That's our QB's grandmother, and we will show her respect.
So that's it. That's the only voicemail.
Play it again.
This is Glenda Jones, and I need to talk to Marty. Would you ask her to please call me? Thank you.
Do you have the phone number?
I do.
Text it to me. You can edit the phone number out. I'm going to call it right now. All right. We're calling Glenda Jones. I'm going to figure out if this is Daniel Jones' grandmother. Hopefully she answers. It's a little late now.
It's her bedtime.
9:09.
Should you say it's Marty?
I'm gonna say is your.
Hello.
Hey, it's is your grandson Daniel around? This is
hello.
Hi, this is Jake. We talked earlier. I was you told me to call about your grandson Daniel. Is he around?
No, he's not here, honey.
But you have a grandson named Daniel?
Huh?
Is this Daniel Jones's grandmother?
I don't know. He hadn't said a thing to me.
Say it again?
He hadn't said anything to me.
But this is Daniel's grandmother. I have the right number, correct?
Well, where is it supposed to be?
Do you have a grandson named Daniel? No, do you have a grandson named Daniel?
A glass?
A grandson named Daniel.
Oh, I don't remember doing that. I'll look and see.
But no, I'm asking, do you have a grandson named Daniel?
Oh, my God.
Well, I was just about to go to sleep whenever your phone rang and I didn't know where to go.
All right, good night. Good night, Glenda. You have a good night. God bless. Yeah, I'll call you tomorrow.
Please, I would. I wish you would.
Okay, bye. All right, I feel horrible now. Glenda is losing her mind.
Should I include any of that?
Are we back? Yes, you have to include it. Did I say anything mean?
No, you did not say anything mean.
She was glad I called. I'm going to call her tomorrow and talk to her.
Oh, my.
But she is losing her mind. I kind of feel bad about that.
I think I lost 17 years of my life.
Hey, at least she doesn't have one of those Bibles that keeps out the Book of Daniel in it. That's good to know.
The Book of Mormon. Are you going to call her tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm going to talk. I'm going to be friends with her.
We should make a YouTube series. Talking with Glenda Jones, Daniel Jones's grandma.
I don't even want to make it a joke. I'm going to make friendship with her, and she's going to enjoy my presence. And she's going to put me in her will and give me $1 million. So shout out Glenda Jones. Did we have anything else to talk about?
I'm the best. maybe this.
No holds bad. He took me in the low post.
All right, next. One of our favorites. Nasty Nick Gates. The guy, you know. In fact, I was listening to the last segment that we have on this, which is Weird in New York. One of our talking points in that episode was like, hey, at least we get to watch Nick Gates play this week. That's something to look forward to in all of this mess. So Nick Gates is obviously our guy. He's actually been on twice, came on the O-line report. So this was at the time like a really big moment for us. And then he tweeted out Talkin' Giants versus the World. Anything?
Nothing. Throw it to Nick Gates.
All right, here's Nick Gates. But first, I know you got it in a bun. But I'm coming for that hair, man. I finally let it grow out a little bit.
Yeah, you're trying. I don't know if you'll catch this, but we'll see.
When was the last time you cut it?
I get trims every probably 4 to 6 months. So I take about inch and a half off. But last time I had short hair is probably 4 or 5 years ago when I was back in college.
See, I this is my first summer doing this stuff full time. Before I was working out in the Florida sun. And so I'd let it grow out. I'd let it grow out. And then it would hit like June and I would just be like, I hate this. I'm done with it. It's in my eyes. It's
You're
going to
cave. I know you're going to cave.
Finally, I'm picking it. I think I might be able to grow it out through a full summer.
Yeah. Summer is a tough part. We used to have the humid ass summers back in Nebraska. It'd be like 105 with like 75% humidity. I wanted to cut it so bad and I was so over it all the time, but just got to put in hats. Hats is my big thing. I used to rock so many hats.
I've started getting the hats. Now I got called out on it. Cause I can't do, you know, I could do like a man bun, but I'm not going to do the man bun. I can't do the regular bun. I got those little black headbands, and then everyone was saying they're girl headbands, but I don't care. It's better than it being in my eyes. So,
well, that's where the sunglasses come in.
Yeah, but I like to. Anyways, let's get off. You were good at tackle, you know, in guard and center. I think you thrive a little more. You didn't have a ton of games at guard, but when you were out there, you were good. I do think it's just every offseason there's going to be centers in every draft that people like, and they're going to be like, all right, we could draft them. Just move Nick out back out the guard. With that though, how did the center thing start? I remember the week you started versus the Jets, you were the backup because Pio was down. But when was like the Shermer was out, Judge was in. When was like that? Hey, get ready to be snapping the ball this year.
I'd probably say the beginning of last offseason. We started doing virtual meetings and OTAs, and I talked with Colombo and Judge and JG, and they all were just like, hey, yeah, you know, start snapping the ball. You're gonna get some looks at center. This training camp. So, you know, the biggest thing is you need to get the ball back to the QB and then we can deal with everything else after that. So.
Well, it was also Bobby's tweet. I'm sure that was also an idea too, because he did a little bit of investigative journalist and he was like, hey, Nick Gates, like this tweet if you're practicing snapping the center. So there you go. So I want to know, especially towards the beginning of last season, which was crazy, you know, COVID year, no camp, limited camp, no spring workouts. So where was your brain at kind of to start last year? Because you're going from, you know, a different coaching regime. You're going from a different system than what you were in 2019. And you're also going into a new position as well. Where was your brain at heading into last season? New spot, everything like that?
I'd say my thing was just taking a play at a time, no matter what. Just come back down to just getting simply your play done that you have in front of you. And you know, just taking care of it one play at a time and just keep looking at it like that. So I just try to stay calm. I was like, I knew, you know, being a new position, you know, new center, like starting a year out, I knew there was going to be mistakes getting made and I can't let those like eat me up inside. And, you know, it's going to happen and it is what it is. And you just got to let it roll off your back and go on to the next play. And, you know, that's again where the one play at a time comes in. So
when did that like, cause you know, you play with a swagger and a confidence. When did that come though, where it's like, all right, not only am I going to play this way, but it's like every play is like, okay, I know what's going on. Like, was it in camp or like, you know, week three, like when was it like, all right, this is where my spot is.
I mean, I knew everything mentally and stuff like that, the playbook and stuff. And I did all that, but just, I probably started getting comfortable with it. Probably like, around game five is when it like everything fully came together and I felt real comfortable, like making all the calls, snapping the ball back there. And I wasn't worried about snapping. You know, I just did probably around game five is when I felt the most comfortable. And then it just went up from there.
Right. Now week four is when you guys played the Rams. Mm-hmm. And I think now here's the thing is, as most people don't watch the offensive line during games, you know, and it, I mean, listen, I like to, pay attention to you guys, but it's hard to watch the offensive line during games.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, all right, the Pittsburgh game happened. That's just the narrative. And then you getting into it with Donald, I really think is what kind of got the fan base on your side. And then by the end of the year, you were everybody's favorite. Kind of explain your mindset. Like, I think one of your brothers messaged me or commented on one of your, you know, videos where it's like he averages an altercation per game. Where like we don't see that every year with everybody. Like where does that come from?
I don't know. I've always had just, you know, that in me. I've always been a little run my mouth a little bit, talk a little bit to everybody, and I would get into it. I've always been like that in college, and I don't know. I just think it's fun. It makes football more fun to get into with other people, and you know, I just enjoy it. So
I like it too, man. I mean, you know, I like to talk. I like to talk trash, and it definitely showed up with you. And I think in that game too, there was the altercation after the game, And I think, you know, the two people who are probably the most about it are you and Monjay Harper on the team. I think that was Monjay Harper's, like, first game with you guys. And he was, like, in people's faces. It was like you and him, Monjay Harper, were, like, in there fighting while everybody else was watching. It was like, okay, so we got like, two psychos on each side of the ball with Gates and Harper.
Yeah, a little bit. I don't know. I was just – he got Tate, so I was just trying to get up Tate. Tate's my boy, so.
Yeah.
He's good people. Just trying to help him out.
Anything you can share from that Aaron Donald intercation? I mean, it wasn't like you guys fist fought, but you're just kind of grabbing each other's face masks and shaking each other. But
you know how it was. It was a close game there towards the end. You know, it's just football. That's all it was. I mean, I don't really know. Both ran our mouth a little bit, and I don't know. That's all it was.
Is there any thought that's running through your head that, holy shit, I'm, you know, shoving Aaron Donald right now? Is that going through the head at all?
Not till after the game.
Yeah, I like after that game, it's like, okay, it's like Aaron Donald got into it with number 68 on the Giants. Like, no, come on, that's Nasty Nick. We got to get his name out there more than just number 68 on the Giants.
First of all, what did you just mess up there, Bobby Skinner?
I don't know. You got to tell me.
He went back to the college number.
68? Oh, 65. My man.
Oh, my.
You know what? I just sent you the email. I won't give your email away, but it does have, you know, the number 68 in it. And I think that's
back in college.
Yeah, 65. I screwed that up.
Get it together.
It's all right.
Every offensive lineman, they dream about maybe scoring a touchdown one day, whether it's through a trick play, through it's recovering a fumble, and you have those celebrations. I remember telling my coach in high school that, like, hey, if I ever score a touchdown, I'm getting a 15-yard penalty. Like, I just hope we're on that same, you know, like, you can't be mad at me. I'm getting a 15-yard penalty. One, you had to have thought all week for Cleveland, I'm scoring a touchdown this week. I'm scoring a touchdown this week as soon as you guys installed that. So, one, walk us through the heartbreak of not scoring that touchdown. And then, two, did you have a celebration plan for it?
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, we had it in for a couple weeks before that. So, we just kind of run it every – I think it was every Friday or Saturday or something like that, just to mess around and see if I could catch the ball every time and kind of, you know, get the gist with me. I mean, they knew I could catch the ball, but so it was – when they caught it, I was like, oh, my God, this is a play. Holy cow. I was like, all right. And I looked at Riley, and he looked at me and smiled, and they shifted, and I snapped it, and I was just like, all right. I probably left probably half a second too early. But BJ played it real well. He just sat there and played it perfectly and saw me leak late and then just picked me up. But
you guys aren't reading, you know, social media comments and stuff. But my favorite was like Gano was wide open on the slant in the zone. It's like that. I guarantee you that, like, they didn't want Riley Dixon going through progressions. Yeah, either this works or they cover. Exactly. There's no in between there.
Exactly. And we ran an IR defense before they even knew about it, and it skunked them. They had no clue. I caught the ball on every turn. Like, what the hell are you doing with the ball?
I know. It's like you expect some type of trickery, but not the center catching it. I didn't even know the center could catch a pass. I know you can report ineligible and stuff, but
it was weird, but.
Did you have a touchdown celebration plan?
I think I can't remember. I think there was a couple, but this is the only one I remember. I was thinking I was going to shotgun a beer, like a fake pass out beers to like Riley and Gano and like a couple of guys, and we were going to shotgun them, like fake shotgun them. But
there's a few ones. You know, I always said if I was on the road, I would, you know, squat down and take a dump with the football if I did it. And then I also thought just chucking the football as far as you can to the stands.
I also thought about doing that, but I'm like, if I do that, I want the ball. Like, if I score a touchdown, my only touchdown, if I want the damn ball. So
knowing Cleveland fans, they might have thrown it back. So you might, yeah. But that is true. You can't get rid of that touchdown ball. So, I mean, my heart, you know, one, I'm a Giants fan, so I wanted them to score, but my heart broke. It's like, dude, that's every offensive lineman just thinks about that.
I won't ever get another opportunity, but it is what it is.
When I remember AT got the 2-point conversion in Dallas, and I remember a clip came out that week of you guys catching passes, and, you know, you're 0-3 or 0-4 at the time. And I remember people like, this Judge guy doesn't know what he's doing. How about these guys block, not catch? And it's like, well, look what happened. They actually were doing that for a reason. So it ended up working out.
Versatility.
Yeah.
The more you can do.
Yeah, not like Andrew Thomas. If you know things don't go well, it's like, hey, look, put me at tight end.
Yeah.
So let's go back to the early part of your journey too, because I I think we've talked so much about 2020 that it's like we forgot. One, you're an undrafted free agent, so the odds are already bad. And then you missed the whole first year. I mean, like, did you think, like, this, you know, when you had that injury that, like, oh, this is probably it. Like, I'll keep in shape and stuff, but, like, this, you know, my chance is done.
Yeah, no, I mean, going on draft. So, first of all, I thought I was going to get drafted and, you know, go through that and that feeling of going to the draft and drafted was bad. So, I felt – didn't like it. So, you know – going on draft, I feel like I had something to prove, and I even left early too. So I, feel like I had something even more to prove after leaving school and then going on drafted. And then, I just got injured. And I thought it was after that. I was done. I was like, oh, I'm getting injured. They're just gonna, give me injury settlement and tell me to get on my way. Just because usually that's what happens undrafted free agents. You get hurt your first camp, and I don't know. I guess they liked me or something. Thought they'd give me another chance, and they're like, all right, kind of take this year as a redshirt year and, learn the playbook, get bigger, get stronger, just get better, like, healthy. And that's kind of what I went about it and looked at it like. So it was I think it was a good year for me. I could, get in there and learn, like, the insides and out of kind of how the league works and, how it is. It is a business and it isn't just football and having fun anymore. So
I'm a big fan of preseason football, and I want to see if you can validate my opinion. It seemed to us from the outside looking in that you were not, like, originally scheduled to be part of that, like, O-line group that was going to make the 53, but then injuries kind of happened in camp, and then you played well in preseason. Did you move up the depth chart with that, or was that kind of like, you just kind of were always where you were? Say it again?
And you mean the preseason and stuff?
In the 2019 preseason, because it was that's where you first caught our eye. It's like, man, this Nick Gates guy, like, he could be the swing tackle, and then you come in and play well, but, like, did you move up in, like, the ranks throughout that preseason?
Kind of, not really. I just, they kind of, that year, I think they just ran with the twos the whole time and was just doing that. And I played, I had good practices. I practiced real well, and the coaches liked that. And, I just kind of, they had confidence in me because they knew I could play tackle too, or they didn't know I could play tackle until, I think it was Wheeler got hurt. And so they're I was like, I play tackle, right? And I could play if I have to. And they're like, all right, yeah, I guess. And let me go out there, take a couple reps. And they're like, all right, he still has a set. And they're like, all right, look, let's try him in the preseason game. So I didn't do bad. I didn't do great, but I didn't do bad, man. And that's kind of how that all worked out.
All right, next we're going to have Rich Soibert. And I actually ended up having to listen to the whole Rich Soibert interview for this. I forgot how, like, open and conversational Rich Soibert was with us. Like, he was just, like, giving us, like, real answers. It was actually a lot of fun with Rich Soibert. Like, there's a lot of stuff we had to cut out of this that we couldn't, like, because we, it would have been 20. I wanted to put the whole interview in there, but I think we put, like, 13 minutes or so in there. So that was good. And we had him on right after we signed Pat Flaherty. So I'm going to kick it to Rich Soibert in a second. But first, it's time to step up to the plate with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. New customers can bet just $5 on any game and get $150 in free bets no matter what, win or lose. Looking to turn another small bet into a big payday this baseball season? With DraftKings Same Game Parlays, you can do just that. Create your own parlay by combining multiple bets like which team will win, total runs, extra innings, and more. And boom, you have a total shot at an even bigger payout. Some parlays. So, speaking of a parlay, Angels Twitter got mad at me today, Justin.
They got big mad. They got big mad at you. Or it was last week by the time that people are listening to this.
Yeah, well, I was just like Aaron Judge. Like, so Chris Rose and Trevor Plouffe were trying to say Shohei Ohtani's the AL MVP. And one of the questions that Plouffe asked was, like, if you just swap them, are the Yankees better, the same, or worse? He's like, they're at least the same. So I made the point that, like, one, Shohei Ohtani is not top five in any batting category. Aaron Judge is having an insane batting year. You know, obviously leading the league in home runs and, his OPS, all that stuff is through the roof right now. So I made that point with Ohtani. And then I also said the Yankees have the best, like, starting rotation in Major League Baseball right now. So you add Shohei Ohtani, you get his offense, which is nowhere near what Aaron Judge is right now. Still really good, but it's not anywhere near what Aaron Judge's offense is right now. And he has to play the DH. So then it's like, is Stanton playing the field? So no, if you swap those two players, the Yankees would be worse off with Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, because this is what's going to happen every year. As long as Shohei Ohtani is somewhat of a good pitcher and somewhat of a good hitter, there's going to be people saying, oh, he should be MVP every year because he does two things, two very important things. As long as he isn't dog shit of a hitter and dog shit as a pitcher, then, oh, okay, is the argument going to be every single year that he should win MVP? That is the precedent that Chris Rose and Trevor Plouffe are presenting, and I think they're wrong.
And he's having an awesome year pitching, you know, like he's fifth, and like, but he's not. It's, again, you got to be close to like the best on
one of those
things.
Don't fault these Major League Baseball players for not being able to also pitch. Like, yeah. If they're having an insane MVP year, then they're having an insane MVP year.
And Ohtani deserved the MVP last year, but this year, yes. Aaron Judge deserves the MVP.
Yes.
DraftKings. DraftKings. How about that? Actual real baseball talk on the podcast. Right now, if your same game parlay doesn't hit, you can get a free bet back up to $10. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. Best of all, you get a deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. And let's not forget the part about where playing in New York is one thing. And also, Ohtani literally chose the Angels because he didn't, like, care about winning.
He didn't want to face the... No, that's not it. He didn't want to face the pressure in New York. Like, that's legitimately it.
Yeah, and he wanted to be on the West Coast and play for, and you could have been on the West Coast and played for a good team. Like, he does not care about winning. And like, Aaron Judge has had like 4 walk-offs this year.
Yeah.
Minimum 3. I think it's 4 walk-offs he's hit this year, so in a contract year. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code JOHNBOY. New customers can make any $5 MLB bet and get $150 in free bets no matter what. That's promo code JOHNBOY. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. MLB trademarks used with permission. Now here is our guy, Richie Soybirds. So, Super Bowl. Obviously, everyone has nerves before the Super Bowl. That fourth quarter drive, though, was there like a... nerves before that, or it was like, let's go do it, we're listening to Stray and get a speech and we're going.
It was let's go do it, right? I think I forgot who said it. I know it's in the papers, but somebody said prior is like, would you rather be down by 3 with a minute left or be down by 4? And I think if you're
Eli,
Eli, right? Yeah.
And I think that's how our old team was, right? I think you'd rather go down and win it and go down and kick a field goal and tie it, right? So if you're down by 3, the coaches are thinking, hey, we got to play for 3, right? We don't need a touchdown. We don't need to win. We can just get a 3 and tie it. I'm like, being a competitor, right, no matter what you do in life, like, you want to win the game. You don't want to tie no damn game. I don't want to kick no field goal tied up. I'd rather be down by 4 and win a game. And, it's funny how things work out, right? Down by 4, and the offensive line gets beat, and Eli makes a hell of a play, and Tyreek catches it on his helmet, and we score a couple plays later. You were no more nervous playing that game once the game started than you were any other game, right? Now getting to that game, right, building up to it, the 2 weeks, and it might have been the longest 2 weeks of my life, right? Being away from your family for so long, and then them coming down in Arizona a couple of days prior to the game or whatnot, not really seeing them too much until after the game. And, but I'm sure the O-line just did a podcast, and you forget about stuff in that game, but you forget about. When somebody on their team said, hey, after we beat you guys, you can come to our party. It'd be more fun. You just don't, speak with us, speak soft, carry a big stick, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever that saying is, don't, why would you say that shit playing a football game? It's just going to piss the other guy off, right? So I'm glad it worked out our way. Aren't we all glad it worked out our way? That was a fun game and a fun night and a fun couple weeks. And, looking back at it now, and it was just on TV, the whole thing was, and I got to watch with my family, and it was cool, right? It's you won't forget that one.
Did you adapt Tom Coughlin time at
I'm still on Coach Coughlin time. You can ask the kids like coach, right? Listen, be on time, right? I don't care if it's 5 minutes early or if it's 8 o'clock, and if it's 8 o'clock. Don't be late. Don't be late to class. Don't be late to Zoom meetings. Don't be.
I think you were 5 minutes early to this because you were like, oh, he's in the room now.
I was waiting for the text message, right? Because you guys told me you were going to text me prior to 9 o'clock. I'm like, when's the text message going? But I think that's with anything in life, right? Like, be on time, be accountable, do your job. And if you do that, you'll have a job in life and make money and have a good life. And if you don't, you're going to get fired and you're not going to play. You're not going to have a job and you're not going to do good in life. So The whole 5 minute early thing gets blown out of proportion. Just set your clocks. Like in his mind, he couldn't say 7:55. He had to say 8. In our minds, you know, we had to say, hey, it's 7:55. It's not 8 o'clock. It's silly, but
it's just some of the best Eli pranks that that you've been part of or that you've witnessed.
That Eli did to us or we did to Eli.
Ooh,
whichever one's going to make our listener both actually.
Well, the best one is I'm not going to say any names, right? Because I don't want to incriminate anybody because I don't know if his wife still knows who did this. We always had family. Well, Coach Coughlin had family day with the Giants. I don't know the year, right? It's been too many years. But somebody took his cell phone during meetings because you couldn't have cell phones at meetings. We took it. We went into the O-line room or tight ends room or running backs room. I'm not going to tell you who it was. And we said, hey, it'd be really nice if you came to family day because all the other wives and kids are coming. And then she wrote back something like, you know, we talked about this last night. You didn't want me to go because we don't have kids yet. So me and my sister made an appointment to get us in a spa in the city. It's like, well, it'd be really cool if you came because I don't want to be the only player without his wife here. And they put the phone back in his locker after practice on a Friday or Saturday. She was walking down and he was walking up. And he goes, like, what are you doing here? And she goes,
that's brutal, man.
Right? So, like, she ended her day. She came. We brought, you know, but it was a rough couple weeks, right? But it was all retaliation for what he was doing to us, right? So things people think Eli wasn't clever, but, like, we all heard the story, right? Super Bowl week, we had whatever, Super Bowl year. We had green ties going to Green Bay. He took our shoes going to the Super Bowl and gave us – dress shoes that are painted purple, right? And Coach Coughlin made us wear them because you had to wear dress shoes, right? There's nothing else you could find. He would mess with our cars in training camp, right? He put Vaseline on them or whatnot. Mm-hmm. So we always went different ways, right? I think the one that I chickened out on and all the guys still make fun of me is Thanksgiving time. And I'm glad I didn't do it now because we got our asses kicked. We were going to Denver. Remember, Denver kicked their ass on Thanksgiving and I went to one of those turkey places in New Jersey and I bought a turkey, a live one, and I was going to put it in the meeting room for the quarterbacks. And I was like, if I put this live turkey in the meeting room, I'm probably going to get fired by Mr. Mayor, right? He's going to be pissed. There's going to be a turkey flying around in there. So then I was going to put it in his car, right? Like, what if I just put it in his car? But I'm like, then the turkey's going to die and we have all these animal lovers on me, right? So I'm like, I can't put it in the room because, you know, Mr. Mayor, we all near Coach Golf. I'm really upset. I put it in the new bubble. Right, if I put it in the practice facility, how cool would that be? You're going out to a walkthrough and there's a turkey in there. I'm like, Mr. Bear might get mad. So I gave it to my buddy. He raised it. The thing lived for like 7 years, right? So I felt good. The turkey that was going to get his head chopped off for Thanksgiving got to live for seven. Was alive for 7 years. But there's a lot of, you know, Eli. We had fun with Eli, and he had fun with us, and that's part of, you know, building that relationship and building that trust with each other. And when it was time to work, we worked. But when it was time to have a little bit of fun, we had a little bit of fun. And he liked to dish it out, and he was pretty good at taking that too.
I actually think some of your players might listen to the show. Like, we've had people like, oh, yeah, I'm friends with, you know, with Rich's son. So if you're listening, make sure to do some of these to your coach. Which do they ever prank you at all?
The players I coach?
Yeah.
I'll make them run.
Well, I will just make sure you don't. I guess you can run the whole team. I don't think
the coaching staff, we have fun together, right? But not the kids, not high school kids. I don't. There's no pranking. Like, well, you know, I tell them we're gonna run, we puke, but then we just cut practice short or whatnot. But that's what we all do, right? To give them a bone once in a while. No pranks. High school seasons are too short to even get into it. We did prank one of my coaches, which was pretty funny. We pretended we were a girl that liked him and got a burner account or texted him all year, right? For the whole year.
Oh, that's brutal.
We're texting him. At the last game of the season, we finally said, hey, by the way, that girl you've been texting has been us. He was so pissed, but that's what keeps the, you know, all that stress buildup in football. You need to do this kind of stuff to relieve it, right? To get rid of it and to take your mind off of the game for a split second just so you can have some fun.
Yeah, I suck at pranks. Like, I always go too far where it's like, this is not funny. One year, our coach, it was April 1st, so he should have seen it coming a little bit. But we went into his office and like, hey, coach, we got caught doing so-and-so after track practice, and we're all probably going to get expelled. And he's just like, he said, "You got caught doing like," and he had a hot temper. So I realized, like, you know what, these type of pranks like aren't funny. Like making your head coach think that like his five best players are getting ready to get kicked out.
You know, it's funny you just said that. This sparked up. So I had a kid, I don't know, 3 years ago, one of my better players, right? He came in and showed me a picture of a baby. He goes, "Coach, I'm not going to play anymore. I just have to." I'm going, "Well, having a baby doesn't mean you can't play. You can still play and have a baby, right? Like, you didn't have the baby. Your girlfriend had the baby." And then he goes, I'm just kidding, Coach. I'm like, "Why would you do that? Right? One of my better, come up to me the day before a game and say you're not going to play anymore because you had a baby." But they got me and all the coaches. I think the coaches were behind him on that one. They laughed. The kid laughed. I laughed. But that's – right, like you remember your coach because of that.
Player stuff is real, but it maybe this is because I'm a Giants fan and you know I grew up on watching you guys. But it really does seem like you guys are a brotherhood. Obviously, you know you got you five up front, but and you mentioned some other names. Like it really does seem like you guys are some tight knit, like as tight knit as a NFL team could be. And one of those activities is hunting. We know some of you guys, some you know you've brought some. Of the other guys out there, who's the best hunter on the out of your guys' group?
Besides myself?
Yeah, besides yourself, of course. We get, like I said, 77-0. We always.
Well, it's funny, right? So, you guys talked to Tolleson yet or no?
Probably. Yeah, he was supposed to come on with us for like a live stream one night, and I texted him 30 minutes before. He's like, "Oh, I'm in the stand shooting ducks," and I was
duck hunting, right? Duck hunting. He's a big hunter.
Yeah.
So I forgot where we played. We got back like Monday morning, like at 4 o'clock, right? And I say, "Hey, listen, you always been talking about bow hunting. How about when we get back, we just run and get our bows because we couldn't have them at the stadium because that's illegal, right? A weapon at these fields. And we go out to my spot down here in Warren, New Jersey, we bow hunt." He's like, "Oh, that sounds like fun." So it's the first deer Dave ever shot at. It was with me with his bow, right? And I think I got him hooked. I did the same thing for Tuck, right? We took him to a spot, Targeteers up there in New Jersey, and He buys his bow. We take him bow hunting in New Jersey, and he falls in love with it. And you know, he's been hunting more than I have. Hunting to me is—I grew up doing it, right? My parents, my grandparents, my uncles, my cousins, my kids hunt. It's just another special time, right? To be in the woods and to be around nature. It's not about the killing, right? I know some people are against it, but listen, I eat everything. I eat everything I kill. So it doesn't matter if I go eat, you know, buy a hamburger in the store or if I make my own hamburger, it doesn't matter. But I enjoy it. I enjoy taking people for the first time. So I think Tolleson would be the best, right? Tolleson hunts a lot. The prior group, Chris Bober likes to hunt, right? The one, the
Bober.
The,
okay.
Jason Whittle, I took hunting up here, you know, for the first time bow hunting. There used to be a charity turkey hunt or a fishing tournament, but they took us turkey hunt up in upstate New York. And they got guys from New England, Buffalo, Giants and the Jets. That was pretty fun. Tim Green actually put that on. So it was Tim Green's charity event up in upstate New York. And, you know, that was cool. But especially during the football season when you're playing, right? Like after a game when you just want to forget about, just take your mind off it for 3 hours. There's nothing better than going up in a tree, strapping on the harness, and just falling asleep, right? Just relaxing. Because I could never sleep that much like the first couple of days after a game because you're all pumped up still like Tommy Boy, right? So I'll go in the woods and play and try to shoot a deer.
Every time I tell people we're interviewing this, they look at me like I'm crazy. But when I was trying to say we're four, like every Sunday morning before the game, whatever the mascot was, we would find a video of that being shot. Like if the Giants were playing the Bears, we'd find a video. And at first it wasn't received so well, and then it became something people look forward to.
Wait, what do you do when you play a team without like an animal mascot?
Well, like the Bucks, we found like people like shooting down a pirate ship. So shooting a Cardinal's illegal, so I had to like edit it a little bit where like people shooting and then you see the Cardinal laying on the ground. So we got creative towards the end of the season.
What did you do for Washington this year, the football team? Were you get a football team and blow them up or what?
We only did a picture. We had a picture of George Washington and then someone pulling a gun at him. So
that's great.
Like I said, everyone looks at us like we're stupid when we do it because we are. So, but what I was trying to get to, and we'll finish on this before the show ends up getting canceled, is whoever we're trying to go maybe with you, Tolleson, and we'll bring a green screen. And to get more creative, with the video next year, you know, be like, I'm Rich Soyberg, and just like blow off the Eagles logo or something. I don't know.
I can't share an Eagle, but yeah, the Eagles logo, I'd love to.
Yeah, yeah, we'll do the logo. We won't get you in too much, you know, we won't get you fired or anything. So we'll do our best. All right, Rich.
I'll blow up the logo. I'll take one of their helmets and blow it up for all I care.
Yeah, that's, you know what? That's what we will do. We'll get their helmets and everything, and maybe we'll get, like, you know, we'll dress Justin up in it and shoot him with like a beanbag gun or something. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
I went to beanbag gun. Probably should have went to paintball gun first. All right. Like I said, before we get ourselves in trouble, Rich, appreciate you.
All right. Next is after the second win of the 2020 season. We have, you know, we try to not BS about nothing at the beginning of like a lot of podcasts BS about nothing at the beginning of the podcast. We know that people are here to listen to the Giants. So we save our BSing for the last 10 minutes. It's like weeks till we could say, hey, Giant analysis is done. We've given you the best Giants analysis. Now we get to talk whatever we want. And just randomly brought up a story about how I almost got into a fight in a Little Caesars and a Walmart.
It was a very, very funny story, almost getting to a fight at Little Caesars. But most importantly, it's what came of that story after that I think is cool to me. And I do think there's some credence to this theory that we have.
Well, one, it just became like the most meme thing in Talking Giants history. Like our listeners meme, like made as many memes. And I mean, we still get the Little Caesars jokes, like to the point where I even made a Little Caesars sticker for Talking Giants. And we found out Joe Judge is a listener of Talking Giants. Like he, like a week later, he brought up Little Caesars
randomly,
unprovoked in an interview. It was like, okay, you're definitely listening.
You're in the pizza capital of the world, the New York and New Jersey. And you just randomly bring up Little Caesars, not Domino's, not Pizza Hut. You randomly bring up Little Caesars like a couple days after we put out that episode.
Yeah. So we found out Joe Judge was a listener of the show through that. So here
is. I believe it.
Well, we kind of found out a little bit that he may not have been a listener, but he was an observer of the show at least. So here is us talking after our second win of the 2020 season versus the Washington.
Let's see. We're at the 46-minute mark. I got to find one more dumb tweet. One more dumb tweet.
There's JPP jokes happening right now.
I did. I said, that's classless. Classless jokes.
If Jason Pierre-Paul has 10 fingers, that's 6 points for Tampa. Eric Eager at PFF Eric.
Another guy who freaking talked all that, talked that talk and ain't do nothing.
Guarantee you, all you people making fun of JPP with not having 10 fingers, he beat the shit out of you. Guarantee you.
I don't know. Guarantee. I think I could take JPP.
Well, not you. You are a mammoth of a human being.
I know, but I couldn't take JPP. I'm just
You're
kidding.
Also a guy that I can, if, when you get in like fight mode, like I'm about to fight someone.
I also haven't been in a fight in like 7 years. So like, it could all be in my mind of like, you know, 7 years ago, and then it's like 28-year-old me gets in. I'm like tired after 5 seconds, you know?
No, I think the fact that it has been 7 years, that you have so much pent-up aggression in you, that if you had the opportunity to go at it with JPP, why are we saying JPP in this instance? But no, you're really mad at him for what he
Stop.
What he
stop the madness. I cannot beat JPP. I'm fine.
No, but it's 7 years of pent-up aggression, and you haven't gotten into a fight since then. I think you would maybe make it, like there would be 10 seconds that would go by that would be like, oh, he's got a shot here. And then after that, you get tired and it would just be bad.
One day I'm going to be on like a famous Twitter video about getting in a fight in a public place. Because my issue is I hate when people act a fool in public and like berate somebody. Like I was in a place a month ago and this woman had parked in a handicap spot. You're not supposed to do it, but it is what it is. Some guy walks in there and gets right by, like, excuse me. Excuse me, you just parked in the handicap parking place. And she's just like ignoring this guy berating her. And I'm like, don't say anything, Bobby. Don't say anything, Bobby. And then finally, like, she's like, sorry. Like, okay. Or like, okay. She didn't say sorry. She said, okay. She's like, you're not even going to say sorry. And then finally I was like, dude, we're in the middle of a Little Caesars. Like, chill out. And he looked at me. And he was like, all she had to do was say sorry. I was like, no, she wouldn't. Your crazy ass would have still been going off if she said sorry. And then he walked out. But I was like, I was like, dude, you're not going to berate this woman in the middle of and then once I, 2 years ago, I was at Walmart, and the same thing. The self-checkout's not working. This guy's all mad. Like, he's getting mad. And he
was
takes
it the same
stuff.
Guy? Was it
no,
the same
different,
guy?
Different guy. Takes okay. his stuff and just throws it at the lady's feet and curses at her. And I was like, why? And I was like, dude, don't be an asshole. Like, see, there's nothing they're doing to do it. And then he's, F you, F you. And then I did shove him just to be like, because I didn't want to fight in a Walmart. All right, I shouldn't be sharing all this on the podcast.
Those were two of one of the best punchlines I've ever heard. You just said it. I didn't want to fight in a Walmart. And then two was, dude, we're in the middle of a Little Caesars. That was some of the funniest things.
My issue is I just hate people. I cannot stand people berating people. And especially women. Like, I really, that really does bother me.
I have something. I just got a tweet from friend of the program.
Okay.
Joe McManus, who does very good, nice little designs.
Yes, McManus Designs. Go follow them.
He said, at Justin Panic, when you said you wanted the Giants to be playing meaningful games in November, is this what you had in mind?
That's a good tweet. That's a good tweet
by
the guy,
tweet.
McManus Designs.
Yes, this is exactly what I had in mind, being 2-7 and being kind of 2.5 games out of first place in the NFC East. Yes, this is exactly what I had in mind.
That's good stuff. That's good stuff. I mean, any more? Let's find one more dumb tweet. Scrolling. Let's see if NYG Daily had one. He's pretty good. He's pretty good at delivering on those.
All right, next is Kevin Zeitler. I actually thought you did a much better job with the Kevin Zeitler interview. This was at the beginning of me and you, you joining Talking Giants, and I just I went so hard. One, so you got to know who you're interviewing. Kevin Zeitler and Brandon Jacobs aren't the same, but I was just like, hey, no one wants to hear about, you know, the detailed part of O-line play with Kevin Zeitler, because he's not going to give it to you. He's going to treat it like a press conference. So Zeitler is not the most open guy, and I just kind of went too hard at like trying to get funny questions. And but you actually had some good questions in there, and that's what we had on there. And Zeitler's our guy, Justin.
Yeah, I think one of them was the whole, you know, the videos that went viral while he was a Giant, where his wife would record him doing O-line sets in the kitchen. And that's still, like, I look back at that fondly as a memory and as a time that, you know, that we have of how we can connect with the O-line and stuff like that. Usually it's not really a spot where you, like, can connect with guys like that. Sarah Zeitler is also awesome, too. I'd say we're closer with her than we're closer with Kevin. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
All right, here's Kevin Zeitler.
I think your wife has kind of gone viral on Twitter a few different times about the origin of practicing your pass sets, whether it's in the living room with your lovely daughter, or it's, you know, taking advantage of practice fields on the soccer field when you're on vacation. So what's the origin of practicing your pass sets in these what some may seem to be weird and inopportune times?
What he's asking is, are you doing that for just to show off, Kevin?
Oh no. So I think that stemmed from, so back when I was in high school at Wisco, that we were a triple option offensive team. So I never really did true pro style pass sets. All we did was play action and, you know, all that good stuff. So when I got to the University of Wisconsin, you know, I had so much to learn, you know, because I came to Wisconsin. I wanted to like play. I wanted to be the starter. I wanted to be like on the wall there. Like that was my goal coming in. So I just knew I had to learn how to do it. So I was like, after my freshman year, you know, we had a lot of depth there at Wisconsin. And I was like, okay, I'm like second string, third string. So I need to, you know, I'm in my mind, I didn't get to redshirt. So I'm like, I'm already running out of time here. So it really was just coming down to like, okay, I got to get really, really good. I want to do this. This is what I want to do. So, I mean, almost, I don't know, an hour to 2 hours a day, I'd be up alone in the indoor practice field on my own. In addition to weight training and speed training, all that good stuff, I'd be up there working on my pass sets like that, taking it seriously, mentally picturing it, trying to learn how to snap when they try to make me a center. Didn't work. So it was like, it just became natural. Like, so that doing that extra work was just part of the day and, you know, just a constant, you know, always trying to work on that. I don't know why it always seems like, for me, in my mind, I guess, you know, ready, it's always hard for me to keep my technique than other guys, so I need to keep working on it constantly to keep everything working the right way.
When did you start practicing the hop in your stance?
I think that came like in seventh grade. That little, I don't know. I always thought.
Did it
like,
drive coaches crazy?
I think so. And I feel bad about it. But it's like, it's been seventh grade. And it's like ingrained. So I think I do a good job managing it overall, like, you know, where it doesn't affect anything, but, you know, just is what it is.
I remember your first preseason game doing it, and I was like, that was a false start. What's going on there? And then they don't call it. And I think your wife even put out, like, oh, yeah, he's done that forever.
I don't know. I just happened. I don't know. I saw it kind of like locking into the stance after the bounce. I don't know. But who knows?
Speaking of preseason, do you remember turning the guy in the Bengals helmet around on a certain play?
I do. Because it freaked me out. I was like, "Oh God, you all right?"
What did he say?
He didn't say a thing. He was just trying to get it around. But that was you know, that's the crazy thing. You never know when a helmet's going to get stuck like that, and something wild's going to happen.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool play. I'll send you the highlight if you want.
All right, next was pretty recent, so we didn't pull much from it. I think less than 3 minutes worth, but it's Andrew Thomas, which I think is maybe like our biggest one, at least top three biggest moment in show history was interviewing Andrew Thomas. Not only interviewing Andrew Thomas, because we were always going to interview Andrew Thomas, but interviewing him in person in a van. And I thought we got him to answer some really good football questions, Justin.
Yeah, but also, at least for me, I think the reaction to the Andrew Thomas interview, I think I talked a little bit about this during our 4th of July mailbags, but I'm going to talk about it again. The reaction to the Andrew Thomas interview was just really, really cool. Before people even listened to the interview, when you posted that picture of us actually just talking to him before it was even published, just saying like, oh, this is so cool, this is so cool, congrats, guys. Like, that affirmation, I mean, it's why we do this. You know, we do this, we put out shows, and we talk with each other, and we talk with you guys for that kind of affirmation, positive affirmation that we like what you're doing. So that was really, really cool. So I can't thank everybody enough for kind of being the reason why we're doing this.
All right, here's Andrew Thomas.
So you franchise left tackle for the New York Giants, fourth overall pick. So things are starting to come together with you. But I know, as a former offensive lineman, I know it kills Gates. Is, like, your prize moments catching that touchdown versus Tampa Bay?
Definitely. For sure. I mean, since I was young, I always talked about being the tight end and playing receiver, like, all the way back to high school. And none of the coaches believed me, so finally getting a chance to run a play was the best moment.
So you never got, like, the trick play shot in high school or, like, a defensive touchdown or anything?
So in high school, we had a play, but we never called it.
Okay. So. DJ made you work for that throw.
No, he did. Yeah, it was pressure that play. He had some pressure in his face. And usually in practice, you know, he puts it right on my numbers. It's easy. But he threw it up there, had to jump and get it. Once I caught it, though, I was turned.
It made for a better picture. And we got it.
That was your Air Jordan moment.
Air Jordan.
Yeah, we got Air Drew. Sponsorship. Yeah, we got to send you the shirts for the Air Drew. I've been meaning to do that. Obviously, things didn't go to plan last year, but do you still talk trash to, like, Kenny Golladay and Kadarius Toney? Like, remember, don't forget, I have more touchdowns as a New York Giant than you guys.
Nah, I don't have to say anything. They already know.
Rub it in a little bit. So, want to talk about, you know, the rookie year through?
Yeah. Yeah, so 2020, you know, obviously, you know, kind of a two-part season, right? Mm-hmm. First half, you know, kind of the rookie struggles, and then the second half, it kind of kicks in. So I want to know, was there like an aha moment? Was there a moment where that kind of light bulb kind of came on, whether it was something technical, something in your mindset? Was there like an aha moment that you had to kind of transition that rookie year and turn into the AT that we kind of know you as?
It was kind of around the bye week. Mm-hmm. That's when I really started to understand my set and stuff like that. Like in the early part of the season, like had an issue of like oversetting. I'm so eager to get outside, you know what I'm saying, and giving up the inside. So just working on that, and then, like, my hand placement and stuff like that. I'm still working on that now, but I think that was the biggest difference from the early part of the season to the second part.
Who was the toughest guy you went against this past year?
This past year? I'm trying to think. I actually like Barnett from the Eagles.
Yeah?
Like, I think he slept on a little bit, but, like, his skill set doesn't go well with mine, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think I'm better with, like, more elusive guys trying to run around the edge, but he's, like, a shorter, stockier guy with good power and stuff like that. So he was somebody that I like going against this year.
going. I'm still mad that Quinn got that sack on you because he was going for the record. He was dipping the edge every
not,
time.
Not playing the run at all. I was like,
not even a second. Not of even. Yeah. I've never seen a guy just like dipping the edge. I'm like, right. I was like, damn. I was like, he's killing him, but he's gonna get him one time. And but it was all good. Andrew, appreciate you coming on, man.
All right, next is from a legendary voicemail caller, old man. He was at the time 69 years old, so now I guess he's 70 or 71. Gordy. And we had Gordy calling from a bridge, and then I actually included the call after. It was from a famous Talking Giants listener in Tim Coffey.
Oh, familiar.
Said he might jump off a bridge. So it was a lot of... honestly, I can't really explain this one. You got to listen to this one to know it. Justin, could you read... Do you... We haven't heard... Here's the only thing I miss about having the voicemails is the mailbag pod did get a lot better without voicemails.
Yeah.
But you miss moments like Gordy and just unintentionally funny things and people who are kind of like a part of the show. Like Dan in Staten Island, he was a part of the show on the voicemail shows.
Yeah, I miss Gordy. I also... Dan from Staten Island, I know, still probably leaves mailbag questions. But Gordy, I miss Gordy. I hope you're okay, Gordy, if you're listening to this. That was really funny, because then he, like, clarified, like... I think I mentioned I'm on a bridge, but I'm okay. I'm not... it was honestly, like... It was a very cute moment. So, I love Gordy. One of my favorite moments of the show. I'm so glad you plucked this up. Before we throw it to Gordy, we have a new sponsor. Interesting time to be rolling out a new sponsor, but it's actually a local joint, and I love my local businesses. Bear Burger, something for everyone. Yes, even you. Bear Burger, they're all about burgers, and they're everywhere. Local, yes, but they are everywhere. So many New York locations. They have a location in Brooklyn as well. Hoboken, the one that I'm going to be going to often, is the location in Westfield, New Jersey. That's very close to where I am. It is on my bucket list during this vacation week. I am going to be checking out Bear Burger. Yes, they're a burger joint, but we aren't the type to be bogged down by labels. Our menu is filled with options for everyone, regardless of dietary preferences. Whether you're 100% vegan or you think ketchup is a vegetable, we won't judge. At Bear Burger, there's only one dietary restriction you'll be limited to: food that's made to taste great. Bear Burger Kitchen and Bar Happy Hour, it's the best in New York City, 12 to 7 p.m. That's a lot of hours to be happy. Monday through Friday, exotic burgers, they're back. They have elk burgers, ostrich burgers, and bison burgers. I'm a big bison burger guy. They have some lunch specials too. So what I want you to do is click the link in the description to find yourself at your favorite new happy hour spot, burger joint, and luncheon. Bear Burger. Click the link in the description to see what they got.
And here's Gordy.
This is Gordy. I'm 69 years old and a Giants fan since I was six. I'm on the out to New York, and I forget what else I'm supposed to say. Oh, I'm calling from a bridge over a little stream on my handicap scooter. Anyways, you guys are great. I listen to 5 Giants podcasts, and the two things that keep me from depression are you guys and Rammstein. Anyway, two questions. Daniel Jones is reminding me of Mitchell Trubisky and that Jacksonville quarterback from a few years ago, whoever he was. Something about having no magic. Why don't you comment on that? The other thing I'm curious about, I really like Joe Judge. I mean, it's hard for me to get down on him. And I wonder what that's about. What do you think it's about that I might, or other people too, might continue to like him, even though they're losing? Keep up the good work and keep my spirits up. You're doing it. Thanks. Bye.
All right. Gordy left a voicemail call or a follow-up.
Sorry, guys. It's Gordy again. I realize I said I'm sitting on a bridge in the stream. I'm not suicidal or anything like that. I also mentioned depression, so I'm laughing now. it's a little tiny stream, a little tiny bridge.
I
I feel you, Gordy. I love the water. I love to spend some time there. So I like that he called from there, and then he called back. He's like, you know what? I was mentioning being depressed by the Giants and being on a bridge with my scooter, and that could have came off wrong. So I appreciate the follow-up on that, Gordy. So we'll answer his Daniel Jones thing in a second. But Joe Judge-wise, I think why he likes Joe Judge is because he's old. Gordy's an old man, and Joe Judge plays to the old people. With that, I mean, he plays to me too. I'm just saying.
That's not necessarily true. I mean, Gordy's talking about why don't you have the feeling that Daniel Jones has the magic? You have the feeling that Joe Judge has the magic.
Has the magic. The Orlando magic. Mm. All right. And then one of our favorite listeners, Tim Coffey, left a call too. Because I told him to.
All right, Bobby. This is Tim Coffey from North Carolina. I'll leave a message. Talk me off. I'm going to try and leave this on the Talking Giants one, not the Patreon only. Talk me off an effing ledge, man, because what I see out of Daniel Jones is I see a guy that doesn't fit what the coaching staff wants, or a coaching staff that has no idea how to use a guy like him. And I don't see progression. I don't see jack shit, to be honest with you. I see a great defense, and I see a lot of confusion out of a young quarterback that really makes a lot of bad decisions. So go ahead, talk me off that ledge, because as of right now, I'm about to jump.
So we have Gordy calls and says, just letting you know, I'm not jumping off a bridge. And Tim Coffey calls and says, I'm about to jump off of a bridge. So that's the state of the Talking Giants voicemail line right now. Changing up the voicemail greeting has really shaken up our world.
This is community in action right now. This is what community looks like. What do we want to attack? Well, we already kind of, we said, Joe, why do you like Joe Judge, Gordy? Joe Judge has the magic. Or at least he feels like he has the magic. So I think we answered that. So
let's talk about Daniel Jones. I'll let you start. I want to say I was so pissed off at myself Sunday night, or what was it, Monday morning or whatever, because we and you argued about that last throw. And then I went back and watched it, and I saw it, and I was like, damn it, Justin was right. Justin was right. I was so pissed off at myself, and I was waiting for tweets about it. Got some YouTube comments. I was wrong, okay? One out of – I make one mistake in 2 years. It's the only mistake I've ever made. I was wrong. But I want to kick it to you. What are your thoughts of Daniel Jones?
All right, next is Brandon Jacobs. This one was very recent, so we didn't take much from it. But I was very pleased with the Brandon Jacobs interview. I had a lot of fun doing it. And I am on a war path to get Mark Colombo, that pussy, to acknowledge me.
The Giants Wire wrote, you know, they listened to the interview. Thank you to the Giants Wire. Most
Dan
likely
Benton.
Dan Benton wrote it. That right? Yes, Dan Benton. So thank you, Dan. And he had to transcribe. He had to transcribe the whole Mark Colombo quote. And when you actually like try and read it out, especially
sorry, expletive,
when you're
expletive,
it's quite a hilarious read when it's actually transcribed. So. Thank you to Dan Benton, Giants Wire. Pretty funny to actually, read it out. And Bobby, you want to throw it right to it?
Here's Brandon Jacobs. Well, we're all sharing our favorite Brandon Jacobs runs. Mine is the one in the Dallas playoff game, not necessarily because of the run, but just to this day, my favorite celebration is you just curl hopping the ball into the play clock. Was that pre-planned, or you were just like, fuck this stupid city and throw it through the ball?
Yeah, more like what it was, though, champ. It was like, I hate these motherfuckers. You know, and that like the tick and it was just like, oh, like I couldn't ball up enough hate. Like,
oh,
you know, that's how I felt.
Yeah, you could feel the hate in that throw, and I think that's why it's every year. Every time that shows up, I'm like watching it over. Just the sound it made is, you know. You could put me in a room by myself and just hear that sound, and I'm like, that's Brandon Jacobs throwing the ball at Dallas. Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, Brandon was so loved and still is by Giant fans. Like, he kept doing stuff like that to especially teams that we hated. I used to watch him beat up the goalpost pad every single place he went. Mm. You know, he would just box the pad that had either Dallas or Eagles or whatever. And especially in Philadelphia, he loved to get on that case because he loves the fans over there anyway. If there was another place he'd play, didn't you tell me that one time? There was a place you would play, it would be in Philly.
The place that would probably be Philly, because Philly's fans.
And I would have hated you then.
Yeah, I love that.
See, that's a take I have that I don't say a lot because I kind of have I low key love Philly fans because they're just nutcases and I gravitate towards nutcases.
I love it. I love them. I love them to death. You know, tell them all kinds of shit. So, as much as I love the Giants fans, those fuckers were more mean to us than they were to anybody else.
You know? Yeah, that's true. We know that.
We all know that. We all know it.
Man.
Speaking of people we hate from Dallas, Mark Colombo, you had your run a little run-in with him back in the day. Mm-hmm. Joe Judge ended up having a run-in with him. Giants, I mean, we can't stand him. I thought he was a horrible coach. We nicknamed him Dumbo Colombo.
I think with him and I was going to clear something up at something Patrick Creighton said before the game. Right. And I was going there with some, you know, like, yeah, you said this and you said that. This fucker pushes me in my back. Pushed me in my back. Like, oh, that's a bitch move. Like, why would you do that? Like, I'll beat your ass out of here on this field. I will whoop your ass on this field. And then Coach Gilbride came in. Coach Gilbride's old, you know, I kind of kept my cool. Coach Gilbride's older guy. I didn't want to put that type of pressure on him. It stopped me from really, you know, doing what I wanted to do and possibly getting in trouble too. So, He pushed me from behind. I thought that was a bitch, but whatever.
He's a weirdo.
He felt good about it.
He's got a metal band. So I tweeted at you a few months ago, a lot of celebrity boxing matches. You know, we saw Frank Gore in there, who's one of my favorite guys of all time.
All right, I love Frank.
What kind of purse do we have to set up to get a Brandon Jacobs versus Mark Colombo boxing match? Because he needs it. He doesn't have a job.
It doesn't even matter. I'll stop him before one. I promise you that.
I need it. I really need it.
Hey, pay me whatever. I'm with it.
It's my life.
No question.
So you're saying like a celebrity softball game, home run derby, celebrity boxing match. I got it. We're in. Don't worry about it. I'll take care of it.
So I'm going to tweet this at him. He's a pussy. He won't react. I can't stand him, but I won't. I before I die, I need to see Brandon Jacobs, you know, one round Mark Colombo.
I'll get in there with them. I'll get in there. There's no question. There's no question about it. I will get in there with
them. All right, next. This is about a week after the 2019 draft, and I was a big fan of Daniel Jones in the draft process. In fact, I think I referenced it in this clip, but me and Danny King weren't doing Talking Giants as seriously at this before the draft. Like, we were doing some draft stuff, but it was not in depth or anything. But like, so at first, like, we're like, we hate Daniel Jones because we never watched him. We just listened to what media people said. And then we actually watched Daniel Jones before the draft. I wouldn't be surprised if this guy's the best QB in the class. And then when I really dove into him, I did fall in love with Daniel Jones. It looks like I'm wrong on that, but I did fall in love with Daniel Jones. But here's something I will stand on. The media conversations around Daniel Jones sucked. They were like me 3 weeks before this rant. Lazy. They were very lazy, and I went in on them. So I love, some of my favorite content is, you know, my podcast rants. And this was the first one ever in Talking Giants history.
Yeah, but people are going to not listen to what you just said about criticizing lazy media takes, but they're going to hear one of your first lines as I can't wait until Daniel Jones proves all these people wrong so I can go on a quote tweet fest. And that hasn't happened. So,
I mean, I was right in a sense, like the way they talked about him was wrong. And especially after that rookie season, like people did have to eat some crow on Daniel Jones.
Yeah.
So here is the first ever rant a week after the 2019 draft.
How long it take? What? How does the Miley Cyrus song go? I don't know. It's the climb. That's all I'm gonna say. It's the climb. We're starting a mailbag today, Twitter questions. But anyways, I got a rant though. I wanted to start off with that positivity because I'm about to go off on these fools. I am so freaking tired of talking heads and beat reporters talking about nonsense. Dan Orlovsky saying, he said, Daniel Jones makes good throws. He has good film. But my worry about him is his off field, that he's too aw shucks. Dan Orlovsky, what does that even mean? He's too aw shucks. Have you watched him? Like, seriously, And I mean, Dan Orlovsky, like, he does break down film, but it's like, what are you talking about? Are you just looking for a reason to not like the guy? What do you mean, aw, shucks? You mean the guy who rips the ball out of a running back's hand on fourth and one to get the first down when he's getting tackled? The guy who never takes a sack easily, which is something I want him to actually do. But, like you watch every single sack of Daniel Jones, and he's trying to get his way out. He treats it every single time like it's Super Bowl 42 and David Tyree open down the middle. And it doesn't make any sense. And I kind of know what it is that he had Haskins came on good to get up. I'm going to praise this guy. I'm going to pick this guy. And then this guy I'm going to say bad about, because it's an easy target because people didn't really know about Daniel Jones. Likewise with us. I mean, I was talking on my buddy's show, The Sports Hour. Go check him out. And like 3 weeks before the draft, me and you, Danny, were like, yeah, Jones, like, well, I hope we don't take him. And then we kind of watched him. We watched a few games and we're like, he's actually not bad. And then now that we've watched all, it's like, I think he's freaking good. So Dan Orlovsky, and he's actually the least of these people on my list. I got a list now. I started bookmarking.
Oh, no.
I cannot wait until Daniel Jones is successful, because I'm gonna go on a retweet fest. And then Joe Dolan, who's a fantasy boy, I guess. I guess he hosts a serious show. I was looking at his profile a little bit. He's like a fantasy football guy, which I'm calling him fantasy boy. He tweeted out, when someone says that a quarterback's best quality is that he doesn't make mistakes, it's usually code word for he's not really good at anything. It's like, well, Joe Dolan, who said that? Like a few talking heads on TV. Like, what are you talking about, Joe Dolan, you fantasy boy? Why don't you learn? And if you're going to talk about somebody, put a name on it. At least when I do stuff, I tag people in it. Put a name on it. And I call them out. Like, hey, fantasy boy, look at the scouting report. And all the positives. Where does it say he doesn't make mistakes? And he does make some mistakes. But like, all the positives are his, you know, the way he puts the ball in the tight spaces, his accuracy, his moving on the run, or throwing on the run, his mobility. Like, where are you getting this from? It's from a few talking heads. Why don't you do some homework, fantasy boy? And he didn't have the balls to reply. Jeff Schwartz. And I've actually liked Jeff Schwartz in the past. There's times where he gets full of himself, and I think he smells himself too much. Now, Jeff Schwartz will break down film, and he'll show his work on Twitter, which is cool. Like, that's the kind of stuff I like. But Daniel Jones, and I did a Twitter search of it, he hasn't done that once. All he's done is given hot takes. This is his analysis on Daniel Jones. He's not going to be good because Baldy did the video, a couple videos on Daniel Jones, the one where he's scrambling against UNC and getting the touchdown. And, like, Jeff Schwartz, like, is trying to call Baldy an idiot, saying, like, oh, running QBs, they don't work. It's like, have you watched Daniel Jones' film? He can run, but he's not a running QB. You obviously are ignorant. That's why I asked him. I was like, hey, man, usually when you talk about a player, you do some film on it. How come you never did that with Daniel Jones? No reply. And I called him lazy. And Orlovsky, his aw shucks take is lazy. Some of the other stuff he does, like him as a whole, like I won't get on Orlovsky's like whole body of work. I probably shouldn't have called his whole body of work lazy. But the aw shucks take, like, that was just dumb. But Jeff Schwartz, what do you mean? Like, you haven't done any homework on Daniel Jones. You just kind of went with the masses. And now that people are actually doing their homework and you're getting some pushback, like, oh, all these Giants fans are calling me lazy because I didn't like their players. No, we're calling you lazy because you're just giving out takes with no evidence. You're just saying, oh, running quarterbacks don't work. Well, Daniel Jones isn't a running quarterback, Jeff Schwartz. So maybe do your homework, okay? He sits in the pocket, but he can move around. He's almost more like Aaron Rodgers. I'm not saying he's Aaron Rodgers, but that's kind of like his playing style, or Ben Roethlisberger, where he doesn't want to go down. So this isn't like, oh, Daniel Jones, like, he's the next RG3 or Marcus Mariota. That's not who he is. So just shut up, Jeff Schwartz. And if you're going to talk about somebody, do your freaking homework. That's what you get paid to do. Instead of being like, oh, I gamble. Oh, boy, I lost my bet. Ooh, like, that gets old, man. Do your freaking homework. And then Warren Sharp, I don't know who this cat is. I guess he's got 90,000 followers. He has a thread of just bashing Daniel Jones. Like, what's the deal, man? Like, yeah, oh, it's like posting videos of people's reactions. Like, dude, you're paid to be a professional. Why are you just, like, giving hot takes? And I'll even take some shots of the beat reporters, none by name, because some of them are actually doing really good jobs. But if I see one more story about this person says Daniel Jones would have been available at 17, or this person says Daniel Jones would have been available at 30, I'm going to puke because I'm just so tired of seeing the same freaking story over and over again. Oh, yeah, you're telling me people are talking about, are saying that they wouldn't have taken it? Oh, you think, guy? You really think that's what's happening? It's just so dumb. I mean, we have our first round quarterback in 15 years, the first quarterback where it's no doubt he is going to start and be the future, not this Davis Webb, Ryan Nassib stuff. Like, this guy is the future, whether we like it or not, and whether he's good or not, he's going to get a chance. So, like, it's like, what's the point of writing these stories? Why don't you actually, like, learn about the guy and give us some substance instead of the just same regurgitated crap over and over again? Like, Dave Gettleman said this. If I was Dave Gettleman, I wouldn't say another word. I'd pull the Bill Belichick process and just be like, next question. We're on to Dallas. Because every time I try and talk to you guys take it and run with it. And if I have, and then now we're getting articles, are the Giants going to take the Arizona model and draft Justin Herbert next year if they have a top two pick? Like, are you serious, guys? We haven't even started rookie camp and you're kicking him out the door? Like, do some freaking homework on the guy. I'm not asking you to agree with me or rant with me, Danny, but say some words, because that positivity from the beginning has turned to negative.
No, you're right. Yeah, obviously you're right. Yeah.
All right, next is Sandro Plascomer. I think this was one of your favorite interviews, Justin.
Yes, because I made Sandro Plascomer laugh. And he was one of those guys where, since we talked about this with Darnay Holmes a little bit, had a trouble cracking his shell a little bit. But there was actually a lot of good moments that Bobby was able to pull from the Sandro interview. But one of my favorite memories just as a whole is I joked with Sandro about Ronnie Barnes, the team doctor, has been here for forever. And I'm pretty sure he is still here, Dr. Ronnie Barnes. And I love him. But it's also, do we actually like him? Because we look at the Giants' medical status on the team, and it's like, well, it's not very good, but who's the problem? I don't know. But we actually got Sandro to say that he's actually had conversations with Dr. Ronnie Barnes about eventually kind of being the team doctor for the Giants because he is studying in Austria to become a doctor. So I thought that was a really, really cool connection, a behind-the-scenes thing that Sandro... that Sandro revealed. So after he's done being a running back for the Giants and he gets his PhD, Sandro Plascomer, Dr. Sandro Plascomer for the Giants.
I'm for that. Like, when, if he does get cut, like, I am saying, let's hire Sandro as to the New York Giants in some facility, and then eventually he can be the team doctor. Like I will be pushing for that. So here is Sandro Plascomer. And the Sandro thing is cool. Like, the internet, I am... Like, you know, the Giants signed Roy Embatika from Nigeria. Like, I love the International Pathway Program. I think it's the coolest thing ever. I don't care if Sandro doesn't ever turn into a real NFL runner. I think it's something that it's one of the few smart things that the NFL actually does that it doesn't actually need to do. So I love that. So here's Sandro Plascomer.
Was it right after the season? I got like a call from guys working for the NFL International Program. And they told me about the testing that they have in October. And the best players eventually get to IMG Academy and might have a chance at, getting on an NFL team. And it's only four guys making it every year. So at that point, like, I thought, like, well, at least I get the invitation. And I think because I usually have pretty good measurements, I felt like I can actually have a shot at this. So I just healed up after the season. I played through it like a shoulder injury and started working out in the off season. Maybe 2 months or so. And then mid-October, they flew me out to Germany, not too far from here. And we had the testing and I did pretty well. And then I had to wait, basically. I had to wait until December. Just kept working out. I was in university all the time. And in December, I actually got the call that I was going to be going to IMG Academy, working out with the Pathway Program, being part of one of, was it nine guys? And four of those nine guys eventually would make an NFL team. So at that point, it kind of got pretty real. You know, people were always talking to people already knew, like, well, Sandro, I have no doubt you're going to make this and everything. So, you know, it was a step-by-step thing for sure. Like, every year was better. And then I got that call. I was at the testing. Then I was at IMG Academy. And then from there, I got the call to the Giants. And that's, you know, everything else is history.
Right. Well, I feel like Ronnie Barnes has been here since 1924. He's been in the Giants organization since then. So, why don't we get you over here so you can be the team doctor? I would love that.
That is my vision for you 25 years down the line after you retire from the Giants. So yeah. that's my vision for me, for you.
Yeah. You could imagine me and Ronnie talked about exactly that thing a couple times for sure. And I'm sure he would like me to be able to do that, but I can't tell you now if that's ever going to happen.
Right. And
obviously it would be more than a dream. Like I would probably wake up every day and be like, how is that possible? I play for the Giants and I'm a doctor. That's just impossible. Well, so until that happens, I'm not gonna, you know, think about it at all. It's just things gonna happen the way they're going to.
Yeah. Well, whatever you do, just let us know and we'll lead the media charge to get Sandro to do whatever he wants whenever that happens. Now I want to finish it off with this, and I didn't know if I wanted to bring it up. In 2018, you beat the Bratislava Monarchs 65-6. Is there anything that sticks out in your mind about that game from other games? Because I'm sure you won a lot of big games. Is there anything that sticks out, whether it's positive or negative from that game?
There's always positive and negative from games. I remember that game. I'm pretty sure it was the first game of the season, and I'm also pretty sure that because Bratislava, which is they were a team that came up from the lower league, so we didn't expect them to be that great. I think I played for a quarter, maybe a half. That's how it usually goes when you play a team like that. And I remember because at that time I was already, you know, playing really good football in the years before, and I just tried to be in an even better shape in that year. So at the start of the season, I didn't really focus on some fundamentals that I should have. And that was the first, I think that was the only game in my career I actually had two fumbles on. I think I didn't fumble the rest of the season for sure, and I didn't fumble all 2019, but I had two fumbles in that game, which eventually I think somebody on my team recovered, so it wasn't really that bad, but it could have been bad.
Yeah.
And I also remember, I think it was only four carries? I had like a 45-yard average on every carry, which was crazy.
Yeah, so I watched the highlights. So I always pride myself on every player the Giants add, I go and do research and I watch, you know, because that's how we gain our following. And then so when the Giants signed you, I'm like, well, how am I going to watch, you know, him? This is going to be highlights. So my best friend, who was my college football teammate, played for Bratislava. He's actually the guy who caused both those fumbles on you, was him. Yeah. So I felt bad because he sent me the video, and I felt bad because I shared the videos of our, like you said, your only fumbles. But it's a small world. Like I said, I'm from Florida. I played college in Minnesota. He was from Florida too. He played in that. I just called him. I was like, hey, do you know this guy? Now, he said you were a baller. We actually had him on the show when we talked about you. He said you were a baller, but he was the guy who caused those two fumbles on you. He was an American from Florida.
That's just how it happens. Like it's just a little thing that you'll be embarrassed about for the rest of your life, because maybe it comes up in 20 years and somebody's going to say, like, man, Sandra, remember you had one game where you had two fumbles?
Yeah. Yeah. But like you said, you averaged 45 yards in that game. I mean, you were insane. So it was just funny. It was a small world that my best friend happened to be the guy who did that.
I'm not even sure if I was called the player of the week, but I know I had like 180 yards and was it four carries? And I was embarrassed because I had two fumbles, you know, and that didn't really show up because we didn't lose the ball. But I hated that game. So
you sliced them. I mean, both of them were him running from behind, you know, like from behind. So it wasn't like, you know, it was a big hit or nothing.
I don't want to make any excuses, but it was the first game and my conditioning was really bad because I was like, I had like a hip flexor tightness going on for like all preseason, basically, like all the camps. So I didn't run as much. I didn't run as much as I used to. So I was, after that first touch, I think the first play was a touch on like 60 yards or so.
Yeah.
And I was already like, my body was already shutting down. I was like, I was not in shape in that game. And then on the second run, like even towards the end of the run, my body just gave up. So I just held the ball. I was already like falling over almost. So,
well, listen, Sandro,
I think I'm going to see him on the 4th of July. I'm going to tackle him from behind when he's not looking and get payback because, you know, I'm a Giants fan before I'm a friend. So I'll
I actually appreciate that because it actually improved my ball security over the next year. And, you know, once if you never fumble, you kind of get lazy with things, you know. You might not keep holding the ball up here because they're like, I never fumble anyways.
Yeah, no one ever touched you. I mean, you were just juking people out of their shoes.
Somebody's going to show up your weaknesses. And then.
All right, let's finish it off, which again, this next part is from my favorite podcast in Talking Giants history. And listen, you really can't get the whole episode from this because it's just so all over the place. But I'll just kind of set it up is, you know, me and Danny King, this was Daniel Jones was hurt. It was before that Dolphins game, which ended up being Eli's last start. I went to the Bronx. And so at the time, I couldn't say in the episode, but the John Boy Media was getting an office in the Bronx. So John Boy told me to stay in the Bronx. But when I got there, the office wasn't ready. So me and my brothers...
Yeah, I was about to be like, you probably didn't even go to the office.
No, it was like, I was going there for the Giants, but it was me and my brothers went. It was a vacation. Like, we paid, you know, it was paid out of pocket. It was a vacation. So we literally took a vacation to the Bronx. It was so stupid.
Oh, my God.
It was when Incarcerated Bob had tweeted out, like, as soon as I landed, Incarcerated Bob tweeted that, like, Shermer's out. And he was right up, you know, it was true. Janoris Jenkins. His tweet that got him kicked out. I actually picked Janoris Jenkins as my Giant factor hours before he was cut.
Huge.
Aaron Hernandez gets mentioned in this. I had my first John Boy Media gripe in this. It was a fun podcast when I go back and listen to it because it was the most fed up I've ever. It was the first time I was just fed up with talking Giants. And it was the week when people started saying the Giants should draft Tua, even though Daniel Jones was having a really good rookie season.
That was actually one of my biggest weeks in content ever, like maybe not like not numbers wise, but what really like propelled me because I was retweeted by Sam Munson, I was retweeted by Carl Banks, and so yeah, the week that the whole Tua stuff started, so we were on very different ends of the spectrum, you and I, that week.
Well, I actually had one of my biggest videos at that time is, and I deleted it. Is I did a video of me pretending to shoot heroin while
different, you and I.
While the Giants, I was like, I titled it, the Giants should absolutely draft Tua and move on from Daniel Jones. And I start talking about it using the PFF sand talking points. And I start wrapping my arm with a cord. And then I start just cooking
burning
a spoon. Obviously not actually doing heroin, but it was making a joke.
Preparing to do that.
Video is gone. I don't even have the video on my camera roll, but I do have a screenshot of me with the... the lighter under this one.
Okay.
So let's finish it off.
Post it to Patreon.
With this podcast titled Weird in New York.
We have a lot to talk about. For one, I'm in New York. I'm in the Bronx, baby. We got Janoris Jenkins going after fans. We got talks about Daniel Jones in the future. This has been a weird week since Eli had Monday Night Football. Dan, I don't know what happened on Monday night, but Eli Manning coming in playing has made everybody lose their minds.
Yeah, it's a strange world, Giants land right now. But before we get that, I just want to congratulate all the Yankees fans on you guys signing Garrett Cole. So congratulations on having the second best pitcher in New York.
Ooh, you know, I'll give you Syndergaard. He's a beast. I like him. Or not Syndergaard, DeGrom.
I was like, hold on there.
Yeah, I'll give you DeGrom. I won't even hate. I think DeGrom is the best pitcher in the game. That being said, it is nice to have him. The city is buzzing. You know, it's actually not. The city is not buzzing. I can't stay in the Bronx. I'm going to be completely honest. And we figured it out after a while. Part of it is we just walk through the hood as like three white boys. And people are like, who are these people? We've never seen them before. And because like no one comes to the Bronx on vacation.
Yeah, and your tours in the Bronx.
Yeah, nobody does that, especially when there's no Yankees games going on. And so, you know, we are with John Boy Media, and I haven't had barely any complaints about John Boy Media. Him telling me to stay in the Bronx is my biggest complaint. I can't stand staying in the city. Everything we're doing is not in the Bronx.
I told you to stay in Manhattan. I was like, Manhattan's the place to be, but you're like, nah, I'm staying in the Bronx. I'm like, all right, buddy, you're going to have nothing fun to do in the middle of winter.
This hotel is half the size of what it looked like on the pictures. This place is, the Bronx kind of sucks. There's not even that many good food spots. Like the first half an hour, just walking around, like mean mugging every single person. It's like, all right, are we gonna have to fight? Because like we are like that, like mean mugging every single person, like we're sizing people up. I think we figured it out though, so I think we're gonna avoid fights.
I mean, anyway, that's I guess the whole goal is to not fight anyone. But yeah, I mean the Bronx.
Well,
is
I did say I did like you know put an open invitation to anybody.
Yeah, you did
who
say
wanted to fight me out there.
Just get on the 4 train and you'll find someone.
How do you even use this like the train though? Like to go to Manhattan? I mean, we got a car, so we want to use it. But, like I don't even know how to use the train.
You just go to the nearest subway station. You go to the platform that will take you to Manhattan. You're on your way.
Yeah, but how do you get like a ticket or anything?
Well, no, you need like a ticket or like a Metro card. It's a Metro card type thing. I guess you get like
how do you get a Metro card?
It's probably like a ticket booth when you go into the subway station.
We'll be driving anyways. But I'm figuring out New York. I've sized New York up. I've come to kick its ass. I think it's going to happen. You know, I visited my old house in New Jersey. That was kind of cool. This is actually my first time in the Bronx, even though, you know, I was born in Jersey and have family up in New York. First time in the Bronx. And I think I'll be running it by the end of the day.
Oh, yeah. You'll be the Bronx borough president. You'll just walk in and be like, all right, this is my borough now.
Well, my second correction, you know, my first one was like, okay, don't just walk through like the apartments. My second one is don't wear your Talking Giants hoodie, Bobby, because you are really tall and people are going to go, are you wearing that because you're a giant? And it just leads to bad conversations. So I went and got a new jacket.
No, I host a podcast called Talking Giants. Oh, okay.
Okay, so we got Thursday Night Football on. And in the background behind Tony Gonzalez, there's someone holding up an Aaron Hernandez Florida Gators jersey. Did anybody else see that?
That is actually hilarious. I guess I can't do anything about it.
I wish I wasn't doing this podcast right now because I would clip that. What a loon.
If Baltimore, you weren't doing this too. Podcast, you should have gone to the Fox Square. You could be talking to that guy.
Is it in New York?
Yeah, they're filming at Fox Square in Manhattan.
Oh. Well, I didn't know that. My mom's like, you can go get behind Good Morning America. I'm like, why the hell would I want to do that?
Oh, that's like a huge thing. You want to get on behind that. Like, everyone's like, guys, let's go. Like, when I'm in the city, like, early in the morning, like, guys, we can catch Good Morning America. I'm like, I didn't come to the city to just stand in the middle of the cold just to have, like, my hand appear on TV.
Someone has a Percy Harvin Jets jersey showing up in the background, too. These people are wild. I kind of love it. So yeah, New York's been all right. It's cold. It ain't like that cold, but it's pretty cold. By the way, if this is your first episode, I won't even listen to the rest. Just be like, I'll try it again on some other time because this episode is going to be off the rails.
Yeah, all right. Like we don't care about the Giants Dolphins. It's a game
well,
that
I'll
like,
be there. So I care.
Yeah, you'll be there. But like, let's be real. It's the Tank Bowl version 2. And, like, no one knows what's going to happen. The Giants could lose. It's not going to be, like, a fun game. Like, I checked, like, the announcers because I always like to see who's announcing just to know, like, if I'll be annoyed listening to them. It's, like, two guys I never heard of. I'm like, oh, well, that's the sign of how bad the Giants are.
I can't get over this guy's Aaron Hernandez jersey. what a wild move. And I noticed nobody wears Giants gear in the Bronx.
Yeah, the Bronx. Like, it's, I feel like everyone only wears Yankees gear.
Yeah, so I got my Yankee. I got my Yankee beanie on and my black jacket.
Oh, so you'll fit in perfectly.
Exactly. That's what I have. Like, I gotta go get myself a black jacket, so I can look like a local. And I just mean mug people. That's like my thing.
That's your thing.
That's your way. That's your way of avoiding confrontation. To be honest.
To make that person
think that you might shoot them or hit them with brass knuckles.
I guess
that's the way to avoid confrontation.
I guess that's just how it is in the Bronx. When you're on the subway, you just don't make eye contact with a single person. You just like one day I'm coming back from the Mets game. They're playing the Indians, and like there's this guy on the subway, crazy walking back and forth between the cars, like doing like gun symbols, doing like throwing up like gang symbols.
Oh
like,
yeah, you avoid eye contact.
He was just like crazy, and I'm just sitting there staring straight at the other passenger across from me. He's just walking back and forth. And the worst part was we were the last stop. And so everyone got off the train at Times Square. And it's me and this other me and my mom went to the Mets game. And then this guy, we're the only ones on the car, and he's walking back and forth. And I was like, oh, this could be the end right here.
See, the way you get on the good side of those guys, or like you get them to not mess with you, is just go tell them about it, bro. Tell them. You're right, man. Keep on speaking that truth, even though they're saying the craziest stuff in the world, and they won't mess with you. It's a good tip.
Are you planning on going to Times Square during your stay?
I don't know. I don't even know what Times Square is. We're going to Manhattan or whatever on Saturday. Anyways, should we talk some Giants?
I guess that's what the show is for.
All right, Danny, you got all the bulletins. You got the outline for the show. Topic one.
All right, so the first story was I found out about it when you tweeted it today because I was in the parking lot having my coffee on my break from school, and then I saw you say something about incarcerated Bob. I'm like, oh, God, what did this guy say? And he said, according to his source.
All right, hope you guys enjoyed it. Those of you who listened to the whole thing, I thought this was pretty cool. We'll do another best of in 3 years. So 2025. This episode, July, whatever that is. In fact, I'm going to find the date. Will be our next best of Giants podcast, Justin.
Can't wait. Over 2 hours this was. So hope for those of you who work long nights, work long days, and you enjoy these long shows, or if you took a couple days to listen to it, I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, so it will be on... Wow, July 4th is on a Friday that year. So
wow.
Maybe tough. We'll do the 4th of July mailbag on July 3rd and then...
Okay.
Or I don't know what we'll do, but we'll...
All right, well, we have time.
We'll plan that in 2025. I thought we were going to plan it. Sounds good. So we appreciate you guys. Friday, we have a Bleeding Blue episode. We're talking about the, what's the name of the thing we're watching and then talking about?
All right, so we're gonna watch the 2011 America's Game. And then I also figured that Snacks doesn't really get a really good opportunity to talk about his emotions and his feelings on the Giants this year, that maybe we can even do that with Snacks a little too. Like, yeah. Get Snacks not behind a Twitter account, not behind where he's being threatened and he's going to get canceled because he wants to boo people. Like, let's get him in a room and let's actually sit him down and let's hear what he has to say about the Giants today. So we'll relive some glory days and then we'll talk to Snacks about his thoughts on the Giants today too.
Excited for it. All right, we appreciate you guys. We'll see you on Friday. Until then, hope you enjoyed your 4th of July, by the way. Until then, let's go Big Blue.